Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Oh, good morning and welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
There you go. Legal's out of the way.
Sure is.
Yep, sure is. Okay, folks, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. It's brought to you by My Philly Lawyer.
Yeah, we know those guys.
Yes. I heard of them. Dean the Dream Weitzman. Some senator says it every weekend.
Whoa.
He really likes you.
He does. What time of year is this, guys? It's like 80 degrees outside. What's going on? Dean, are you? Is this you? You're doing? What's your weather machine?
This is like San Diego weather.
Really?
You know?
This time of year?
Yeah. Like upper 70s during the day and crisp nights.
Guess where we're not? We're not in San Diego, so.
Well, we may become the new San Diego with global warming.
And global dryness.
I saw that movie.
Yeah. All right, folks. We have a special guest for you today. I know you're going to love the show because you always do when he's here.
Yeah.
He gets all the credit. I do all the work. The one and the only Sausalito.
Thank you, Donald.
Better call Saul.
Sausalito.
Better call Saul.
Langsome.
Good morning to all our listeners.
Yes, Saul's on the show, so we're going to talk a little bit about wills and estates. But we also have a little throw-in. You know, maybe not. You don't know this, but in addition to estate work, Saul for decades has been the firm's expert on the formation of small businesses.
Saul.
So, I mean, there was a time when I started working, you know, I was like 12. I started working at the firm. I would walk into his office, and he would have like a bookcase that he built himself, you know, one of those.
Oh, he's a craftsman as well. Really?
Absolutely.
Saul the craftsman.
Yeah, this is the
woodshop.
Yeah.
Other talents.
He would have this bookcase from floor to ceiling at least 4 feet wide, stacked with small business forms, these books that he created for each small business that he formed.
This guy.
You remember those days, Saul?
Yeah, well, you needed...
You know, before computers.
You needed corporate volumes for each
You used to wear the wig to the office,
no,
you know.
I didn't have to do that. But there was a time because the rules required that if you're a bona fide corporation, you have to have an annual shareholders meeting, an annual board of directors meeting. Whether it was formal or informal, it had to be reflected in the corporate minute.
But you still have to have those. You just don't have them in the same way.
The issue, there's less of a demand because, as a rule, if you form a corporation, you don't need the formality until you go to a bank and the bank says to you, oh, you want a loan?
There you go.
I want to see your corporate records. I want to see who's on the board of directors. I want to see your financials. I want to make sure you're legitimate and you're worthy of a loan from this bank. So what would happen then is if I had a company that was 10 years old and they never went through the formality, I was paid to go 10 years back and do all the paperwork.
Dang.
Which was not exciting. It was boring, but the banks were more of a stickler for that in yesteryear than they are today.
And, you know, when you sell a business, you need the representation of attorney to make sure that the assets are sold properly, the liabilities are transferred properly.
Leave no hanging fruit.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're in for trouble. So
we just had a client who bought a pizzeria. Sounds relatively simple. Bought a pizzeria from an existing business. It was in a shopping center. We had to deal with the landlord. We had to deal with insurance. We had to deal with state regulations. He had to get all of his licensing. He was Hispanic and there was a language problem. To the extent that we could try to assist, but eventually we completed the transaction. And every once in a while, I see him with a big smile on his face. So
there you
go. It's a wonderful thing for us.
State regulation. You got to regulate the size of the pepperoni, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's probably your thing.
Or does it curl up or curl down?
That too.
Yeah. It depends if Shaq's name is on the pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Then
okay.
It curls up.
Gotcha.
215.
Only on this show.
215-227-2727. If you've got legal issues or questions, you know what to do. You give us a call, we give you the answer. And there's no charge when you're listening to Court Radio. We give it away.
I was in the office the other day. A friend of mine was up there. Shout out to Richie. You're handling Richard Dean's case. Said you're doing a great job, man.
Thank you.
And that was just unsolicited. Just happened to see him. Yep.
You know what else, folks?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
What are we talking about?
The first B. Braun trial started Thursday in Philadelphia.
Ooh.
You recall, my Philly lawyer is involved in the B. Braun litigation. It's a mass tort. The company was spewing ethylene oxide into the air of their community.
Ethylene oxide.
Also known as ETO.
Uh-huh.
It's a colorless, odorless gas that happens to be a Schedule 1 carcinogen. And it was leaking out of the plant at a great rate. And there was a uptick in breast and blood cancers around the plant. And my Philly lawyer, Klein Inspector, and a number of other firms are involved in that litigation.
Huge.
So it's actually going to be in the Philadelphia County and not in Lehigh County?
That is correct. The Honorable Glynis Hill is handling the...
I know Glynis Hill.
Yeah.
Good jurist.
Yeah.
Good job.
He's a very bright jurist, and he's handling the trial, the first trial in Philadelphia, against B. Braun, so we'll see how that goes.
Mm.
We got an election coming up. We're 3 days away.
I'm so uncertain. I don't know. I need to hear some more about their policies.
Yeah, right.
Really, though.
I don't know who I'm going to vote for.
Really, though.
There are some people, who are like that. There are. As crazy as it may be, there's some people like that. And I don't think Trump's done any favors for himself in the
I don't think anybody
in the waning days of this campaign. To have a comedian on in Madison Square Garden of all places that calls the island of Puerto Rico a heap of garbage floating in the sea.
However, the other side is saying how much of a garbage, or we're taking in all the garbage in our country.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, this whole garbage thing, big shout out to the sanitation workers. You know what I mean? Because
they deserve their contract,
you know
man.
I mean? They deserve
Give
their contract.
Give them their money.
They talking about you.
They riding around in your trucks, acting like they one of you.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on. First McDonald's, then sanitation truck. Come on. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's humorous.
Is it? Is it?
It kind of is.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Here's, you know, my hope and prayer is that there are enough silent votes for Kamala Harris that she takes the election on Tuesday in a substantial way. Because, I mean, women all over the country are dying from the ban on abortion, and these are women who wanted to have children, but they develop some medical condition on the eve of a birth, and the doctors are scared to provide the medical
right.
care that they need.
Lawsuits and whatnot.
And so several women in Texas especially have died because of miscarriages in the latter stages of their pregnancy.
This uncertainty.
Yeah.
So to further that, my favorite number three daughter-in-law, Dr. Stephanie Langsam, who is now the director of obstetrics and gynecology at Lankenau, to address the point you just made, despite her lack of time for anything, does on her own a presentation, a TikTok presentation, where she addresses the most common issues that are misunderstood in the public and tells the people, you're hearing it from a board-certified gynecologist. This is what I do each and every day. This is the issue. This is the answer. Don't read the headlines. And if you have questions, call me directly.
Mm.
And so this is part and parcel
wow.
of having to address this intentional confusion or creation of chaos that's out
there
right
exactly
now.
That's exactly what it is. Intentionally created this
yes.
one. Yeah.
So, folks, do your civic duty and get out there and pull the lever of the most competent of the two that you believe. Whoever you believe is the most competent of the two, pull the lever on Tuesday. We need each and every voter because it will be a close election. And if things go south on November the 6th and you wake up to somebody who's changing the laws and creating this intentional chaos, and you did not do all that you can to ensure your rights are protected, then shame on you. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal in Philly.
Dean, the clocks go back, don't they?
Yes. Yes, can you believe this? We are back again to the weekend of falling back. We're gonna gain an hour, okay, on Sunday night or Saturday night, I guess, at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning. We're gonna fall back, and do you know that due to the time change in the fall, there is a 6% greater risk of having a motor vehicle accident? Yes.
The dickens, you say.
I do. Glare and reflections, headlights and streetlights can create glares and reflections. It makes it harder to see. For some reason, there is limited depth perception during the time change. And because of the time change, the deers get it all confused. They don't know when to go to sleep.
The deer, they didn't change any clocks.
So there's more deer on the road and more deer accidents. In fact, we just began representing a client who was in an Uber vehicle who had struck a deer. Uber told them, go pound sand and there's no liability. The truth of the matter is that if you're driving too quickly and you're in an area of high deer concentration, you need to take it a little slower. And this Uber driver decided he was going to be Mario Andretti during deer season.
Now, you really dated yourself.
Not time.
Man.
What, Mario's not driving anymore?
Really?
Only the arcade games.
Yeah.
Really?
This glare,
go ahead.
Well, the headlight thing.
Yes.
Ever since newer cars got the xenon lights and the brighter lights, my car is a little older. My high beams are now everybody else's low beams. Everyone's lights are high now. I mean, so why does it make more of a difference because of this hour? I would think that once that happened anyway, you were seeing there were more occurrences of these accidents. Because folks, even when we were young, we knew if you're approaching somebody and you got your high beams on, turn them off. Folks don't even do that anymore.
Well, some
cars are automatic.
There
so
you
is that
go.
What it is?
Yeah.
Turn them on and off.
I never see them go up and down. I don't notice it.
Some of them, yeah, they do.
I never notice
it. Yeah, my cars all have that automatic headlight option.
Well, look what you drive.
And so when it sees a car coming towards it or even taillights in front of it, the car automatically drops its high beams.
That's right. Okay.
So I don't get involved in that. But I guess the system's not perfect. And so what you might see is high beams for a moment that could create that glare.
And everybody doesn't have a Dean car. So
right.
Man, some people keep their high beams on and don't turn them down.
Limited population of folks.
In any event, it's a statistical known thing that there's a 6% increase in car collisions as a result of changing to the daylight savings time.
For 4 weeks this goes on, they say.
Yeah, for 4 weeks.
It's amazing. So did you see an uptick in cases?
Oh, yeah. Monday morning I'll be stepping over bodies getting into my office. but, listen, it comes with the territory. I'm here for you. If you have a motor vehicle accident, please give us a call, 215-227-2727.
While on this subject, I will say this. There's been a lot of road construction. Certainly, you've all have tacked it. You've seen it on your end, and you see it coming in, right? There's always closures here and there. They got to do a better job of announcing this because that alone is causing problems. Montgomery Drive right now, Belmont Avenue, they're repaving it, but there are no signs, and people are going on not knowing the other end is closed. And sometimes it's closed during the summer, then they open it back up for the winter, but they don't tell you when that's going to happen. So there's a lot of confusion down there for the last 3 days. I only know this because I do it every day. So whoever's in charge of this, whether it's PennDOT or whether it's the city, you got to do a better job of giving notification, because I'm sure that's causing accidents as well.
There you go. There are a lot of causes for accidents, that's what we do when we take a client in. We have to do an investigation to determine who's at fault for causing this accident.
Right.
Sometimes we use expert witnesses called accident reconstruction witnesses who can determine the speed of the vehicles as a result of the damage done to the vehicles. How much the metal has been deformed will give an indication for them to do a calculation to determine the speed of vehicles at the time of the collision.
These are investigators. This is...
These are experts and investigators. There's video content that we can get from other vehicles. A lot of people have these cameras on their cars nowadays,
dash cams.
These are very helpful as well to determine who's at fault.
Would you recommend most folks?
I try to get everybody to take, you know, and they're very reasonably priced these days.
Yeah.
In fact, the last time we did a live show for Court Radio, we gave dash cams away to some of our...
That's right, we did.
Yeah, right. Some of our guests.
And then if you don't have a dash cam, just to make sure to take a picture of the accident.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Before you move the vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Good point, sir. Good point. He's been listening for a few years.
15, 14 years? Absorbing, immersed in Court Radio?
Like a sponge.
I tell you.
A legal sponge.
Don't get into an argument.
Speaking of sponges, let's talk to Saul for a second.
Wake up, Saul.
Saul, come on. Every week, you know that my Philly lawyer was...
Nominated
and won to be the best.
Not just good, the best
in creating wills and documents for our clients. The Elder Care Law Division, headed by our own elder care lawyer, Saul Langsam, has won the best of Philly for elder care.
Oh, come on.
Now, I want to say, I want to say to our listeners, because I know we have, we have listeners who are very loyal to us, and I appreciate that, that the Inquirer has just opened the nominations for Best of Philly again. And if you surf over to the Inquirer Philly Favorites online, you can get to nominate us again for personal injury, for elder care law, whatever you feel like, you know, we are hitting it out of the park on. I would appreciate that. Go over to Philly Favorites in the Inquirer and nominate my Philly lawyer. And then the voting will open up once the nominations are accepted. The voting opens up January the 1st.
Saul, I have a question. Should the day ever come when you hang up the lofty robe of legalities, have you prepared anyone? Have you groomed anyone to pick up the mantle and pick up where you've left off?
I have not. I've attempted to, but I have not as of yet.
So the secret dies with you.
Well, that's why he's never going anywhere.
He's going to be here.
I mean, the ability. This area. I mean, the area of estate work has been launched by COVID. So you have a lot of younger practitioners who are involved in it and doing a good job. They're clearly doing a good job, and the documents data we prepare are reasonably sophisticated. They speak for themselves. It's easy to follow. One thing attorneys don't do anymore, I mean, the old practice was if you generated a will document, you retained the original. Mm. That was a practice. I can't explain to you why we retained the original,
sense.
But that practice was discontinued. When we generate a document today, our client walks out of the office with the original. It's only the original that matters because there's only one original. And that's the original that's accepted by the Register of Wills for purposes of probate. There are instances where you can convince the Register of Wills to accept a photocopy or a duplicate of the original if you can provide an adequate explanation for what may have transpired with the original document. And you can petition the court, and if the court finds your explanation reasonable, they will agree to accept it. But in the area of probate work, people are much more sophisticated today. They put their thoughts in writing, and you've got the up-and-coming generations who are interested in this area as well. And I think, on the most part, they're doing a good job. But I think it's very rewarding, and I know we help a lot of people, especially during COVID. We help an awful lot of people out. Things like having to get a will probated to avoid a mortgage foreclosure. People don't think about that. Well, if the decedent had a mortgage and nobody's paying it, if you don't get the estate open, you can't deal with the mortgage company. You can't deal with the mortgage company because the mortgage company won't speak to you. And for those reasons, simple things like that that are undercurrents of problems that are easily avoided with documents.
Well, so I think it's because the average person doesn't believe they have the assets or make enough money or have enough whatever to concern themselves with a will.
A will document is not the product of wealth. The will product is part of your estate planning, and you don't quantify what constitutes an estate that justifies a will. People have a tendency to underestimate what they have. This has been shown in studies. If you ask somebody, take a piece of paper and a pencil and just start making a list of what you have, most of the time their eyes will open up a little bit wider because they do underestimate. And the fact that people don't have wealth, I mean, I don't know how one wants to define wealth, but the whole idea underlying the will is you control who gets it. And even single people come to my office who are coming out of school with loans and they're beginning to start a business, or they're buying a condo and they have a mortgage. They're accumulating wealth every day. And if you don't leave your thoughts in writing, it's a sad commentary. We have clients come to us, and this happened very recently in two instances, two elderly ladies with no family. And when I have these discussions with them about naming beneficiaries, it's a challenge for them. And I said, look, you do yourself a disservice if you don't. Otherwise, Uncle Sam is going to be very happy.
I see this happen all the time. I've seen someone pass, and folks are coming over to the house after the person has passed. And some folks are going, well, they always wanted me to have this. And they take a lamp, and then they'll go. I saw a guy grab some keys. He always wanted me to have the car and all. Nothing was written down. And then they get into a big argument, and families, now they're not speaking because nothing was ever determined.
Well, in most instances, what you're describing is an everyday occurrence.
Right.
An everyday occurrence. The daughter that says to me, I know my mother had $1,000 in that drawer, and after mother died, it's nowhere to be found. I said, unless you got a camera in that room, you can determine who took the money. It's gone. And even if the will says I leave $1,000 to so-and-so and you can't identify the $1,000, if it's money coming from a bank, then you have control. But if it's not in these institutions, and people have collectibles, and some people have valuable collectibles, whether it's guns or trains or coins or stamps, if they disappear, they disappear. Mm. And I tell that to families, and they just get so upset. I said, who are you going to point a finger at?
I have a question. So if you have a married couple, do you suggest that they each have a will? Because let's say...
Eric, that's a good question, which I probably presented to me every week. The reality is there's no joint wills in Pennsylvania. Joint wills died with the dinosaurs. The reason is if there's a joint will and the first spouse passes away and you go and probate that will in City Hall, it's gone. Where's the will for the surviving spouse? You're going to go back to City Hall and look for that? They're not releasing that document. So clearly, spouses in each and every instance have to have their own will.
Let me give you a story. This happened in the last couple weeks. I don't know if we're going to have time before the break, but we'll try to get it in there. I got a call from another lawyer who said, Dean, can you help me out? I have a client whose daughter was down in the Delaware area, and she was on the beach, and she got stung by a mosquito. Now, flash forward a few weeks and or a couple weeks, and then the daughter begins to get sick, and she finds out that she has not malaria, but
yeah,
she,
that other thing,
the West Nile virus.
Right. Okay.
And she gets the West Nile virus, and it goes to her brain, and she becomes incompetent. Now, in the interim, from when she got stung till when she got sick, she becomes an adult. She moves from 17. This was, you know, horrible time for them. She moves from 17 to 18. She's in the hospital, and she needs to have a procedure done called ECT. Mm-hmm. And essentially, they shock the brain. You remember One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, they're actually doing that now, but it's done in a very, very...
They've been doing it.
Limited. It's done in a way. It's not horrific.
Okay.
It's therapeutic. It can help people with this condition. The hospital refused to do the procedure. They said that she's now an adult. She has to make the decision for herself, and she had become incompetent
because of
the disease. She literally had no ability to make any decisions for herself. Yet the hospital wouldn't follow the parents' directions to do the procedure because the girl had become incompetent, and the hospital insisted that she have a guardian appointed. Well, it's not easy to get an emergency petition for a child to become, you know, to declare a child incompetent. It costs upwards of $5,000. We did this for this family pro bono. I had a hearing, a full-blown hearing in Chester County Courthouse with a physician who had zoomed in for the hearing, a neurologist, head of neurology at a children's hospital. And so there was an expert witness. There was myself. We had documents that had to be filed. Then there was the parents who had to testify as well. Took about an hour and a half or 2 hours in a hearing in order for this to happen. We eventually were successful. The young lady was declared incompetent. The parents were able to make decisions on her behalf. And thank God she got the procedure. And she was on death's door. She was on death's door. And now she's 80% better and she's out of the hospital. Because she had the right procedures done.
But had the worst thing happen, and they didn't do it, and it prevented her from recovering.
She would have died.
Right. But so the hospital would have no liability in not doing it?
That is correct.
All right, so then what's the takeaway, and how do we solve this?
So the lead-in to that is power of attorney. Dean's example is the exception. The demand for powers of attorney today on the part of adult children for elderly mothers and fathers is so important because of the frantic calls that I get from adult daughters and sons saying, my mother's doctor won't talk to me, my father's banker won't talk to me. Mm-hmm. Under these circumstances today, in these times, you get the POA for a parent while they're still competent.
Yeah, that's the key here. If you wait for them to become incompetent, where they cannot understand what it is they're being asked to do, then the power of attorney is not able to be engaged by the person giving it. You have to know what you're doing. You have to know who you're giving it to.
The very first question I ask when these calls come in is, has any doctor declared your mother or your father incompetent? And if the answer is yes, the only avenue is through the orphan's court to be appointed a guardian. If it's no, get that parent into the office.
And here's the difference. If you come in while mom or dad or whomever, the child in this case, as soon as you become 18, one should think about doing a power of attorney. Mm. You never know. You never know when you're going to need it. And if you become incompetent, as Saul said, you have to go through this lengthy process that's several thousands of dollars, if not more.
Oh, it's more.
Okay.
Just bringing the physician in, either through Zoom or to author a medical report confirming incompetency, is in the thousands of dollars.
And then the legal fees. So what we were able to do for this family was provide this pro bono. The doctor provided his services. We provided our services. But as Saul said, many, many thousands of dollars if that normally would happen to you. What's it cost to do a durable power of attorney?
We'll do them for $500.
So the difference is $500 versus
$5,000.
More than $5,000.
That's just the doctor's fee.
Yeah. Folks, you got to keep listening because we'll be back in 2 minutes. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard, listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host every Saturday morning, leading you with Court Radio right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
Folks, if you've got a legal issue or question, today's the day to give us a call. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Yep, we'll take your questions. Saul probably will answer them. I may, depending. 215-227-2727. Saul, right. Is there any downside to issuing a power of attorney?
Yes.
What concerns should people have?
Okay, the power of attorney is a wonderful document that allows the giver of the document's voice to continue to be heard. However, the caution I throw to the wind is that you have to, when you decide who you're giving a power of attorney to, whether it's a child, whether it's a sibling, you have to be totally comfortable with your choice, because once you issue that power of attorney, that individual steps into your shoes, can make decisions for you, conduct your affairs. And if they have larceny in their blood, and this has only happened to one of my clients in the hundreds of these documents I prepared, a father one brought his eldest child, his only child, his daughter, to my office for a POA. And we prepared the POA, and within days, I received the call from that father, terribly upset, insisting on coming in to see me. because he discovered that the daughter that he gave the POA to went to his bank and withdrew behind his bank back $8,000 in cash. He was upset. He said to me, if she needed the funds, all she had to do was ask me, and I'd be more than glad to assist. So he came to me for two reasons. One, to void the power of attorney that he gave to the daughter, and to issue a new power of attorney to his granddaughter, who was an emancipated adult. That's the only example I can give you of abusing a power of attorney, but you do hear of horror stories in the public.
How do you withdraw a power of attorney?
You send them a letter, a certified letter, and you advise them that the power of attorney has been withdrawn. Now, you're going to ask me, what if they ignore the letter, which they can do?
You have they can?
Well, if they want to be abusive and say, I never received the power, and I'm going to continue to honor my parents' wishes by having me, by appointing me the agent under the POA, in most instances, the receiver of the power will simply tear it up and step aside. But in some instances, it'll lead to litigation.
Well, the other thing to do, folks, if you have a power of attorney that you've issued, let's say you brought it to your bank, then you want to also send a letter to the bank saying that that power has been withdrawn and is void. That way, you put the responsibility on the person who you've given the power to step aside, but you also have notified the people who the power has been handed to that, you know, the person who was no longer a power of attorney would have to then get that bank to issue payment to them or follow their instructions when the bank knows that that person no longer has
a
power.
So that certified letter that you get claiming I no longer want this person as power of attorney is your receipt, and it matters, right?
It matters. You're sending that certified letter to the person that you gave the power of attorney.
Do they have to receive it? Do you have to see them receive it?
They have to receive it, but as Dean stated, if the parent has one or two banks that they do business with, you put them on notice in a All letter right. saying that the POA that was issued to so-and-so is now null and void. And in some instances, we encourage the parent to just close those accounts and open up new ones.
215-227-2727. Y'all better call. 215-227-2727.
We actually do have callers lined up, and we're going to get to you shortly. Please be patient as we tackle these thorny questions with Saul. So, what age should somebody prepare a will? I mean, if you had to give advice to your family, what age?
If you're an man, you turn age 18, there's no harm in having a will in place. There's absolutely no harm.
Okay. So maybe that's a document you helped your children prepare before they head out to college.
Well, that's something parents would probably think of because kids ain't going to think about that.
Yeah, and probably not an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
Once a child becomes old enough to be, you know, out of school, starting to work and make a living, they should be thinking about that.
Yeah,
look, we have a situation now where his son passed away, and sadly there's no children and there's no wife. And his poor mother is first in line under our statute. Mm-hmm. So she's going to inherit the estate.
What a story you guys just told about the young woman who was 17, West Nile virus, and 18. Is good. Well, if she had had that in place, it wouldn't have gone the length it went, right?
She would not have had a full-blown hearing to determine her competency.
Right, exactly.
They would have just handed the power of attorney to the doctors, and the doctors would act upon
and
it.
And no hesitation on any
Yeah,
part
the, what the power of attorney does is allow somebody to make medical decisions for an adult who normally would make those decisions so
if,
for him or herself.
If you're listening now and you don't have one, you should think about it. Now.
Well, let's talk to Crystal on line three. Oh, Crystal, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I had two questions, but this one is really bothering me. I have three grandsons that are grown. One may get married. I have a daughter. I want to leave my house. I haven't had the will done yet, but I would like to leave my house as a family house to everybody. And whoever, they can't sell it unless they buy each other out.
Well, That's almost automatic, I guess.
No. Okay, so if you let me comment on that, because that's a question that's presented with some regularity. On paper, the concept of a family house is a wonderful thing. In reality, it's a nightmare, because a family's going to sit around a table and they're going to talk about the family house. And I've had this conversation with family sitting in our conference room, and I look around to everybody and I say, okay, grandmother's leaving this house. This is a family house. The roof is going to need a $4,500 repair. Could you raise your hand, the person that's going to write that check? And they start looking at me. There's a PICO bill, a PGW bill, a Philadelphia Water Sewer bill. Every month. Who's writing that check to maintain this? Who's writing the check for the homeowner's insurance? And all I do is get a bunch of blank stares. It's a business decision, people. It's a business decision. And therefore, if you want to leave a property, it should go to a family member that wants to take over that property as their primary residence. If they don't do that, then the best advice I can give you is sell the property and the heirs divide up the money.
Because ultimately, everybody's in a different place in their life. And some people want to live in the house, but other people don't. Now, if that's an asset that belongs to four individuals and only one person is living in the house or can live in the house, maybe other people have other things they're doing, then the three people who aren't living in the house have lost their asset. Mm-hmm. They what happens is they want to force a sale, because ultimately all four people have to agree that they're not going to get the money that they're entitled to out of that asset. And they're going to leave it there. And then there's the one person who's caring for the house, but maybe not caring for it as well as they should be. And then you have bills backing up. And then that affects the asset of the people who aren't living in the house, because they could lose the house to liens.
Yeah,
and so it just becomes a big, complicated mess. Yes.
This is a reoccurring theme that I hear constantly. So it's the daughter that gives up her job, that moves in with mother who's been sick and cares for mother for 10 years, and mother dies.
And the other kids haven't done anything.
And she's got two brothers.
Right.
I'm giving you real-life stories here. And
yes.
They want the brothers say, okay, sister, your name's not on the deed, only mom's name on the deed, and we are the three surviving heirs. The house is worth $100,000. We each have a 1/3 stake in this house. We would like you to buy out our interest. And if you don't have the financial wherewithal, we have choices. We can either sell the house and divide up the proceeds, or you will put the house in your name. And if you qualify for a mortgage, you'll buy out our interest,
well, that's
and the property's yours.
Yeah, that's a big if, though. What if they don't qualify for a mortgage?
And in most instances, they do not, because the work record is not there.
So then you can't buy out their interest, and the house sits there.
And you have litigation.
And that becomes a very expensive enterprise. The two brothers are going to end up spending thousands and thousands of dollars.
We went down that road about 2 years ago involving two daughters and a mother. And the one daughter with us spent over $10,000 in legal fees because there was no agreement with the sister, and it became a nightmare.
All right, Crystal, so do you still want to leave it to the four of them?
No.
That was genuine.
You can leave it to the four of them. You can leave it to them, and they will decide whether one of them wants to take on the property as a primary residence, or whether the four of them decide we're going to sell this property and divide the proceeds.
I don't agree, though, because if they don't agree, then it's going to cost everybody a lot of money.
It's almost as bad as the intestate law.
I think mom needs to make that decision for them now while she can.
In a will, it makes it much easier. But there are many instances. Look, where a parent leaves a will and says, I have three children. My entire estate goes equally to my three children. They will then have to make a decision as per each asset, what they want to do.
It's tough.
Creates a nightmare.
Well, can I ask you this? Okay, let's say that I leave the house to a grandson. None of them are married, but one may get married. And I leave the one that is not married yet as a primary person. A primary holder of he's a beneficiary, but
I think I know the question.
Oh my God.
So you're asking if you leave it to the unmarried grandson and then they get married, does the wife then have a stake in it?
Yes.
I mean, based upon the facts you've just shared, that's not a marital asset.
That's right.
Okay. It's not a marital asset because the efforts of husband and wife did not bring about the acquisition of this property.
So what Saul's saying is that when you go to whack up the marital estate, if there's a divorce, this would not be considered the soon-to-be ex-wife's property. She would not get a piece of it. Now, if he owned it for 10 years and the property value went from $100,000 to $200,000, that increase in equity could become part of the marital estate. But if it was a short period of time and he had just inherited the property from you and then they end up getting divorced shortly thereafter, no, she wouldn't get any of that.
Thank you so much.
All right. Crystal, take care. Have a great Saturday.
Right,
we love you.
Y'all be all careful right. Driving.
I love y'all.
Let's take Tamira from on line four, Eric. Tamira?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Welcome to Court Radio.
I love it. You guys are doing an amazing job. This is a subject that the whole community needs to listen to. Philadelphia needs to listen to. Jersey, Georgia, we get them every day from all over. Coming to probate estate, so everyone needs to listen to this.
Wait, Tamira, are you working at the Register of Wills office?
Yes, I do.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate you listening to Court Radio, and, you know, we'll keep on plugging away, doing the hard work, and bring you the estates that our clients need to probate.
Absolutely. And that subject that you touched on about the POA, that's very important because a lot of people don't know about having those POAs, but also a lot of people don't know that once the decedent passes away, it's null and void. But also, when they get that POA, a lot of people don't know to come and bring it to Orphans Court or either room 111 to have it recorded, because we see clients come in and they're in a panic and they're screaming, I am the power of attorney. I'm a power of attorney. However, if it's not recorded and they don't have it on file and stamped certified upstairs in an Orphans Court or room 111, that can turn into another issue. But you guys are right on time with every topic that you guys have spoke about.
Thank you, Tamira. Thank you so much. Have a great Saturday.
Okay.
You too.
I guess that's an affirming call, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Saul, you know everybody over at the Register Wills office, right?
I'm bad there two, three times a week.
Quickly, to follow up, so if you have it recorded and you want to void it, you should go to them
unless you are a person with substantial means. I don't think you necessarily have to record it. It does not – recording the document does not make it any more legitimate or enforceable.
Gotcha.
Once it's properly executed and witnessed and notarized, it's in effect. Mm-hmm. If you want to add that other layer, I would suspect that the people behind the recording of a POA have a serious reason for wanting it recorded.
Folks, we're going to be back in 2 minutes. If you've got a legal issue question, give us a call at 215-227-2727. We'll be back right after this quick break. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard, listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yes.
You want a bomb anyway? Here's a bomb.
Bomb.
All right, I'm going to give you a bomb. All right.
Because I am the bomb.
Yeah. What do you want?
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. We will be happy to represent you right after the show wraps up.
Mm-hmm. Featuring the award-winning.
Yes.
Sal Langsam.
Geriatric why, lawyer to the stars.
Why, thank you for the vote of confidence.
Line one, Delina. Welcome back to the show, Delina. Oh.
Okay.
I hate that sound.
So do I.
All right. I'll lay out Delina's question. Grandmother is 93 years old. Cousin is the power of attorney. Aunt has been taking care, and aunt is on one bank account. Okay. There's a second bank account. And the aunt is not on that. Does the aunt have to go through the power of attorney to get on the second account?
Well, first of all, she would have to go through the power of attorney. But when you say she's on an account, I don't know what that means.
Probably a joint account holder.
You could be an accommodation party and just have access to statements. If you are a signer, then there's an argument you're also a joint owner. So it really depends on the paperwork that was executed in the bank at the time that the account was open. If they're joint owners of an account, then obviously
don't need a power of attorney.
She doesn't need the power of attorney.
But every account is separate and different. So if you're on one account, that doesn't mean you have access to the second account that's strictly in grandmom's name. And on that account, you would need the power of attorney to make any decisions.
That's correct.
All right. There you go. There you go, Delina. Even though you hung up on us.
Banged on us.
Yeah. I'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Put Delina in timeout. Delina, you're on timeout. You're not coming back on now.
Oh, boy.
We'll give you 2 weeks timeout.
2 weeks, Dean?
Yeah.
Crunky in your old age.
I am. So, let me see here. What else we got here? Let's just make a jump here from wills and estates to small business, because I promise people, what's the number one mistake people make starting a business?
Well, there's any number of mistakes that they make, but if you're going to start a business, you want to decide what type of entity you're going to create, whether it's an LLC, whether it's an S-corp, whether it's a C-corp, whether it's an LP.
Are there differences? I mean, is there important differences on these different corporate entities?
There are differences with each and every one. We always recommend that our clients get their accountants involved in that decision-making, because in most instances, the accountants are familiar with the financial status of the client, and that in some instances will dictate what type of an entity, because the accountant may want you to be an S-corp where you can deduct everything personally. They may not want you to be an LLC. So there are accounting reasons, there are legal reasons for making these decisions.
How long does it take for you if somebody comes into the office and says, I have this business idea, we're starting, you know, we're trying to get a lease, I need to get my affairs in order. What's involved in that?
Well, it depends on the time frame. If there's no great urgency, we can do the paperwork and go through the normal route.
How long does that take?
Less than 30 days for normal route. Now, sometimes I get a call where somebody wants something expedited. We have expediters. We go through a company that will expedite because they have an office in Harrisburg and they physically walk across the street and get the stuff filed. They can do that in 36 or 48 hours, but there's a fee.
Gotcha. What's involved legally in the creation of a new company? Besides, I mean, you're filing paperwork, but what other services would somebody be getting at that point?
It depends on the nature of the business. It depends. I can look at my middle son who's building all of these apartment buildings. Some of them he's doing on his own. Some of them he's doing with investors. If you're dealing with investors, you got to create a series of LLCs. You got to create an LLC for the general contractor. You have to create the LLC for the investors, and there have to be sophisticated documents created if there are investors, because there's certain documents that the investors are looking for to protect their investment. If you're not dealing with investors and you're doing it on your own, then you don't have to go in that direction. But obviously, you have to be well acquainted with the project that you're getting involved in.
I mean, even something simple like, you know, you're getting a lease. Okay, well, before you sign off on the lease for your new storefront, you want to make sure you're properly incorporated, because you want to sign that lease in the name of the corporation versus your own name. Manny Manuel signs the lease, not Manuel's Pizzeria, and he personally would be responsible for the full lease. If the business goes belly up, and a lot of new businesses do, then they're going to chase Manuel for the rest of his life for the lease payments.
Well, depending on the age of the business or the success of the business, either the landlord will accept a corporate guarantee, or if the landlord is uncomfortable with the corporate guarantee, the landlord will insist on a personal guarantee, and Manny would have some exposure if the business failed.
Right. And so that negotiation with the landlord is an important part of starting a new business. And so it helps to have legal representation at that point, so you at least know the risks that you have, what's at stake in that process.
As well as acquiring the appropriate insurances to protect you and the business, which requires an insurance agent or person to be consulted as well.
Yeah, so there's a team of folks that you want to, you know, have around you at that moment when you're doing that. Because what could be, you know, a great thing, you're starting a new business, you're an entrepreneur, you're working to, you know, to bring some financial success to yourself and your family, and it all goes up in smoke, and you and your family are exposed to great liability because you didn't have the right people around you.
That's correct.
For the record, it's Manny's
Pleasantry Pantry Pizzeria Palace Food Emporium.
All right, folks, we're just about out of time. Unfortunately, if we didn't get to your calls, give us a call next week. We're always here on Saturday mornings between 9 and 10 a.m. Have a great week, and we'll see you then.